Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
Good Tuesday morning, everybody. Hope your day is off to a great start. How are you guys doing this morning?
I am doing just fabulous. How are you?
I'm great, Key. I'm always great.
Yeah, no, I'm good, man. After, you know, I saw you a little bit on TV last night, but I knew it wasn't you. It's just guy had a familiar look with the hairy face. But other than that, I was good. Made some chili cheese french fries last night for dinner. I just felt like I needed to eat disgusting. But the funny thing about it wasn't eating disgusting. It wasn't your typical Tams number five, number four, chili cheese fries. You know, I wasn't getting this off a Hoover in Vermont or nothing, Manchester. It wasn't one of those deals. This was, you know, french fries that I made. Then I bought the chili from a soup place out here in Westlake that they have vegan soups and regular soups. So I did the turkey chili there, and I had the cheddar cheese, and I dropped some sour cream on it and some diced little onions and some cherry tomatoes. Mm-hmm. And jalapenos, fire. Like,
put a couple of jalapenos on there. You had like half the jar.
It was, yeah. And you know, when you eat something like that, the first thing you do is you lay down on that couch.
Oh. Yeah, I was thinking the same thing you were thinking.
I thought he was heading down a different direction. I was like, Key, we got it.
No, but you know the difference. But see, LZ, I just mentioned to you, that wasn't that Tams and Toms number five and four chili and Ted's. That wasn't that. This was real chili with zero grease.
Like, I understand that you may have had a healthy version of that, Key, but when you eat 900 jalapenos on top of anything, that system tends to kick in overdrive.
Well, you know, those jalapenos, my jalapenos wasn't hot. They just gave just enough little, you know, just a kick of a spice. But it wasn't one of those, it wasn't one of those deals where I'm sweating. But it was
so good. How about
you,
Lizzie?
Let's see. I did a lot of work yesterday. It was a busy day. I got working on a project I told you guys about. And so the phone was ringing off the hook, a lot of interviews, which is always exciting. I've worked from home so much over the last 10 to 15 years. So this just feels natural. And I was just like in a nice little groove yesterday. I didn't get too high. I waited until the end of the day. No midday highness. So I was focused and I was locked in. And then, you know, once I got done with my business, then I got started with my business.
You know, it's funny you say it, that if you, you know, you've gotten used to this. Sadly, I think that's true. I want to go back into the studio so badly, but you're right. I mean, Key, I don't know if you've gotten you, but this is the routine. You work at your desk at home. You come into wherever it is. You guys are doing it, and this just feels completely normal. I mean, I haven't seen you guys other than little pictures on my phone in the better part of 2 months. It just feels like the way we do it now.
Interesting that you bring up work, home, all of those things. I had a conversation last night after I woke up from my nap that a buddy of mine is in real estate, and we were discussing, you know, different forms of real estate, from housing to apartments to retail to office space. And he was saying how office space over the next couple of years is probably going to take a hit based on this, because individuals have gotten, you know, accustomed to being at home 2-3 months, and now you're at home and you're working and you're getting the work done. So going into the office and having office space and spending money and doing all of those sort of things may not be the custom, you know, custom what people have done in the norm, where now all of a sudden they realize, oh, I can get everything done right here in my damn garage, and I can save myself X amount of money every day having a suite or a space at an office space to walk into just to be able to do it. I can always leave to go to lunch. I can always do all those sort of things. And he was just saying that he thinks his office spaces that he has, his office buildings, are going to suffer because of that. So he's trying to figure out a contingency plan on if to turn them into condos or whatever.
Well, if you looked at the industry of newspapers, that gave you the indication what was happening anyway. You know, newspapers used to be in these huge, grandiose buildings, and a lot of them still are. But what was happening was quite a few newspapers that I personally have worked at have moved into smaller facilities and they have people working from home, journalists working from home. And as opposed to having offices and cubicles, they have just kind of general meeting areas whenever journalists need to meet up with their editors or with layout people. So, you know, the newspaper industry has been forced because of the lack of resources to start in that direction. And now because of this pandemic, other industries are catching up to this sort of mindset. And it's also generational, right? Like Gen Xers, I think we're like the last generation to hold on to this notion that you had to go into work. You know, my son, well, you know, he's looking and he's like, what y'all talking about? Like, you got everything you need right here. Why do you need to go into another building to do the same things that's right there in front of you at the house? You
know, well, maybe it's mentality. Maybe it's what we do, but I like seeing you guys. I like seeing whoever it is we're doing these shows with and being able to interact in Zoom or whatever it is does not match.
No, I think we'll be fine because of what we do, the nature of the business that we do. I'm just talking about more so smaller business type situations where, you know, lawyers or you know, people that start up companies, things of that nature, they're going to go back into the old way of doing things when they didn't have the money to afford office space.
All right. So with that in mind, with the idea of everything changing a little bit or a lot of bit in the last couple of months, the NFL is toying with the idea of changing their schedule a little bit. You go back to when we were doing the combine, and then all of a sudden the world came to a different place. Everybody goes home. We held the draft remotely. And all along the way, the NFL was saying, look, we're going to hold our season as scheduled as we typically have in the past. The quote from NFL Executive Vice President Jeff Pasch was, we're planning on having a full season in the same way as previous years. Well, now we're finding out that the schedule makers have a whole bunch of contingencies in plan. We're supposed to get the schedule next month. Comes out in early May, but now we're looking at something where there's a Super Bowl that's pushed all the way back towards the end of February. Usually it comes on that first Sunday in February. This would be at the very end of February, a regular season that doesn't start until the middle of October. That's about a month and a half later than usual. And then no bye weeks, no Pro Bowl, all sorts of contingencies in place if, in fact, we're not quite ready to go back by the fall.
And that's fine. There's still, Jeff Passan said, there's still going to be a football season. So that's the beauty of it. Whether you start in September, the third week of second week of September after Labor Day, or you start in October, you still get a full season. Pro Bowl, whatever. They get this is quasi an excuse, even though Pro Bowl is one of the most watched things during that time. Yep. That this is a reason to get rid of the Pro Bowl because it's flag football on television. And then you talk about the bye week in between. That bye week in between is a waste. It really is. It is really nothing there. The Pro Bowl was there, which was horrible to begin with, the week before the Super Bowl, when it should actually be the week after the after the Super Bowl, so people could actually have a vacation and look forward to it with players playing in the Super Bowl that can play in the Pro Bowl like the olden days. So that part of it is a plus. The Super Bowl being, you know, roll right in after the championship games is a huge plus. We went and beat the Philadelphia Eagles, hopped on the plane, and headed to San Diego to play the Raiders. And, you know, we preferred that opposed to sitting around for a whole week of doing nothing and not allowing the coaches to screw the game plan up, much like the Rams did with Sean McVay, allowing him to sit there for an extra week. No, seriously.
There's a lot of truth. You called it at the time. But I think that the NFL has a contingency is really good news. We've read that quote from Jeff Pasch. Jeff Passan, who works for ESPN and covers Major League Baseball, he had a piece up yesterday talking about MLB. They've got a bunch of contingencies in place, too, and it seems like baseball is fully expecting to play. They're getting ready to go. There's a million questions as to how, where, why, how many games, if they have a season and tournament, but nobody is preparing, you know what, this isn't going to happen. I'm as optimistic as I've ever been about having sports by the middle of the summer, towards the end of the summer, than I've been at any point in this, because these leagues, every indicator, whether it's the science, whether it's the cities, whether it's the easing of the stay-at-home orders, all of these things are leading us to, you know what, it's going to be different. Maybe it's fanless. Maybe it's a little weird to start with, but we're going to get all of this stuff.
You are. And every state is, like you said, is starting to figure things out here in El Segundo. The Lakers are trying to talk with the city to figure out when they can open their practice facility up. So it's going in a direction that, you know, it's been 4 months, I think, since the first case here in the United States that we know of. And so that's a, you know, that's a little bit of a time in terms of every state starting to curve things down or flatten things out. You're starting to see that. You're not seeing where all of a sudden L.A., for instance, we're just on the rise. It's just skyrocketing through the roof like it was in New York. Things are starting to settle down. Even New York, to a degree, is starting to settle down. And this thing, in sports in general, it's a money-driven business.
Yep.
And so there's only so many times, as I continue to say, those owners aren't trying to give the money back to the television networks. And the television networks aren't trying to give the money back to the advertisers. Because think about it. The advertisers paying in cycles. They've already paid the networks. The networks ain't trying to give that money back to them. So they're going to do whatever they can to push this thing through. If it's with fans, if it's without fans, if it's all in one damn gym that they grew up in high school in, they're going to figure out how to get it on the air.
Yeah, they'll figure it out. There's a piece this morning from Dave McMenamin talking about how the Lakers are talking to the city about how they might be able to open their facility a little bit ahead of schedule as well, and some of the precautions that they'll have to go through. We'll get into all of that. That's coming up. But, Key, you sent it last night, some very, very damaging information about the USC football program and where they are with regards to developing NFL players. That's coming up next on the morning show on 710 ESPN. Two guys from the prestigious, historic USC football program. Two players were drafted in the 2020 draft. You had Austin Jackson in the first round. You had Michael Pittman in the second round. And then after that, crickets. Key, how in the world are we in a place where USC, one of the most prestigious programs, a team that's had as many first-round picks as anybody, as many number one overall picks as anybody, is in a position where they're putting two guys a year into the NFL?
Well, I think that that's where it is right now. In the West Coast as a whole, as you heard Mel Kiper Jr. on our show yesterday discussing the future in the draft with me and you guys, is that the West Coast has been down for a number of reasons. But let's take out the West Coast because I don't give a damn about the rest of the programs on the West Coast. I care about USC's program. Mm-hmm. And what's happened in this situation, we saw it happen with the Paul Hackett era. You know, not very many guys getting drafted. In terms of the ones that were drafted with the John Robinson recruits that had developed enough under John Robinson to kind of, you know, move forward with their pro careers in getting drafted. And when you look at Clay Helton and you look at the guys that were drafted prior to him becoming the head coach, those guys were all Lane Kiffin, Steve Sarkisian developed type players that moved into an area being able to get drafted under the watch of Clay Helton. This particular class of Michael Pittman's and Austin Jackson's, this is a Clay Helton class. And two guys to go. Michael Pittman was going to get drafted. He has triangle numbers. He has height, weight, size, and speed. He has a bloodline DNA of NFL. His father is a relentless training, working phenom in terms of working out his son. So he wasn't going to stop the University of Southern California's football program from stopping his son from being drafted. Austin Jackson is a big tackle. Tackles are at a premium. They're looking for him all over the place. So he was going to get drafted somewhere. Outside of that, those are the only two guys. There aren't very many guys that even got signed, if at all, undrafted priority free agents. And that's because when you look at USC's makeup, is this the same players, like I said to you before, Stephen Carr didn't all of a sudden forget how to play football. For whatever reason, he's been put in a position that you're not getting the most out of him, whether it's the system that you run and this one back set that's horrible for running backs, or whether it's you just can't deal and know how to, you know, get these guys to perform at a certain level. Now, it'll be interesting to see if this trend continues, because Amara St. Brown is a guy who's eligible for the draft. Tyler Vaughn's a guy who's eligible for the draft. They've got probably another four guys that'll be eligible for the draft So there's probably six or seven guys that you anticipate should get drafted next year. Now, if that doesn't happen, you certainly have to look to see, well, what the hell is the problem? These are the same guys being recruited, man, by everybody all over the country. And you look at – and I always use Alabama because that's just what I do, or Clemson or whatever.
LSU.
You look at guys like Tyler Vaughn, for instance, that was down to Alabama, USC. If he'd have gone to Alabama with Lane Kiffin, where would his career be at right now? Would he be,
right.
Would he have come out this year with Jerry Jeudy and Henry Ruggs? Would he be in that type of position? You know, it's hard to tell. If Najee Harris decided to come to USC and instead of Alabama, would he be considered the number one back in college football next year, or would he be a guy trying to figure out how to rotate with four other guys?
How much blame do you place on the school seeming inability to coach these guys up for the next level versus the perception that the program as a whole is just down and no one wants to draft from a down program?
Well, that doesn't – drafting from a down program, if you can play, LZ, they're going to find you. I mean, think about it. The New England Patriots took a dude from a school. Where's that school at that they drafted this kid from in the second round? If you can play, they're going to find you. When I played in John Robinson with JR, we had guys drafted that barely played, was being drafted and winning Super Bowls with teams. I mean, you know, hell, Matt Willett had a career of, I don't know, 16, 17 years. Man, that dude didn't play at USC. Matt Castle, you know, Kyle Wacos was a backup quarterback that got drafted to the Green Bay Packers. I mean, and so.
Well, let's put some numbers on this because, look, we fixated, obviously, on it, and for good reason. USC had the 55th ranked recruiting class last year, 55, okay? So that in and of itself is a number, but it hasn't always been like that. Go back to the 2016 recruiting class, okay? This was Clay Helton's first class. This was Clay Helton's class that was ranked 10th in the country. So they did a good job that year. They drafted, or I should say, they signed kids that made them the 10th ranked recruiting class. They had 14 four- and five-star recruits. One guy from that class got drafted, Michael Pittman, one. So you had 14 four- and five-star recruits, and one guy gets picked. You look at Alabama. You look at LSU. You look at Clemson. You look at Ohio State. These are the other teams that are stacking their rosters with four- and five-star recruited players, and then you fast-forward 3 or 4 years, and those same 14 or 15 kids are not only getting drafted, but they're getting drafted high. They're getting drafted in the first, second, and third rounds.
That's all
USC had,
man.
One guy get drafted from that class. One guy. We can talk about them going 8-5. We can talk about them not having an identity. We can talk about all these things. The fact of the matter is they're not doing anything well. They're not winning on the field. They're not turning these guys into pro players. And you just look at it, and it's a pretty straight line to when it changed. It's a pretty straight line to when the winning stopped. It's a pretty straight line to when the players in the NFL stopped going there, and it's because of Clay Helton. It's not complicated.
No, it's not. It's not complicated at all. It's one of those deals where you're not developing the players. I can't think of this guy, Wale something. I can't say his last name, but he was part of that Michael Pittman class. Wale,
is it Malapai?
It may be. That may be his last name. Nigerian kid from Sarah High School who went to Illinois University or the University of Illinois. He transferred. Man, this dude had like 16 sacks this year. He never played at USC. He transfers to Illinois, and Lovie Smith get like 16 sacks out of him. So I'm just like, what are we doing? What are we doing? Because it can't continue. The more draft picks you have, the better your program is going to be. Alabama traditionally likes their players to stay at school to train for the combine so the recruits can come in and actually visually see the work that they're putting in the dreams that they're getting ready to embark upon. USC, on the other hand, you can't have recruits and talk about the NFL because the first thing they're going to say is, man, when was the last time y'all had a corner drafted? Oh, yeah. Dory Jackson. Well, Dory Jackson wasn't really drafted as a corner. He was drafted as a specialty player. could do a lot of different things who happen to play corner. So when you start to look at those things and start to break stuff like that down, that stuff matters to families.
No question. No. We'll circle back to it because those are some numbers, and those are only a part of the picture. It's stunning how much it has changed, and in a relatively short period of time. Don't forget episodes 5 and 6 of The Last Dance coming up on May 3rd. That's at 6 o'clock right here on ESPN, streaming live on the ESPN app. And if you are one of the 1 or 2 people in America that missed episodes 1 through 4, you can stream them now on ESPN On Demand and also on the ESPN app. Will Kane of The Will Kane Show joins us next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN.
GEICO gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that GEICO is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday, Social Security, is that a thing? Hey, mom, what is my Social Security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
GEICO, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
All right, you guys all know this next guy. His show comes on at noon right here on 710 ESPN. Of course, I am talking about Will Kane joining us here on the Sprint People's Hotline. Good morning, Will. How are you?
Good morning, gentlemen. I'm good. You?
Well, it don't sound like you're good, man. Wake your ass up.
I'm up. What are you talking about? I'm 3 hours ahead of you. I feel good.
Yeah, but you sound sleepy. This is radio, man. You sound like you're sleepy. You know, with that fake cool voice.
That's just you know, that's man style. That's testosterone. Then what you're hearing is bass. You're probably not used to hearing that. That's bass.
Well, I don't hear bass. Wow. Sound like you sleep. But anyway, Will?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay. We got a little silency going on there. So, What did you make of this past NFL draft this week, in particular your Dallas Cowboys, in what they selected and how they selected it in terms of getting CeeDee Lamb at the receiver position?
Oh, I loved it. Everybody seemed to love the Cowboys draft. It just felt perfect to them. I mean, they draft for best player available. I don't think they were ready. I don't think they were planning. I don't think they dreamed that CeeDee Lamb would be there. From what I've heard, they were ready and told Ke'Lavon Chaisson they're taking him, 17. They just didn't plan on this dream scenario. And then it unfolded every round that way for the Cowboys. They were picking guys valued on boards 20, 30. In the case of Bradley Anae out of Utah, 100 slots after he was expected to go. So I love what the Cowboys did. I would love to put a question back to you, Keyshawn, before I do. Let me say this. I actually really like what the Rams did, too. I saw one draft analyst put the Rams class at 31, rank at 31 out of 32. I thought those first four picks were really good. Speaking of receivers, I like Van Jefferson out of Florida. Some said he's the best route runner in the entire draft. I thought Terrell Burgess, the Utah safety, Cam Akers, and Terrell Lewis, the Alabama defensive end outside linebacker. I thought all that's really good for the Rams.
Yeah,
Cowboys, really quick, go ahead. Yeah.
No, I was going to say they did a good job in terms of need. I would think that when you look at where they pick, Cam Akers fits certainly in a replacement mold for Todd Gurley or things they want to do from an offensive standpoint, get the ball out on the perimeter, throw the football, detach him from the line of scrimmage, allow him to run routes like a receiver. As he continues to develop, I'm sure he'll be good. Vance Jefferson, I like the fact that they took a receiver. I don't necessarily know if this was the right receiver, given the fact that they lost a speed burner that would lift the coverage. Now, if Jefferson is a guy who is going to understand, hey, I just got to lift the coverage, I got to run as fast as I can, do all those sort of things, you don't necessarily have to have a 4-3 guy like Brandon Cooks to do that. If you do your job, it'll open up everything for everybody else. So maybe that is the case in terms of taking a receiver. I just didn't think that one was the right one, but I'm okay with it. And then in terms of Burgess from Utah, he's a freak athlete. He can run. He can do a lot of different things. That was certainly a need for them to pick up to get some depth back in the secondary. So I don't mind their draft overall. I thought they did a pretty decent job in terms of replacing players.
Yeah, but I get really excited. And if you said I want one trait for sure. Yeah, bass gets a little troublesome every once in a while. It really does.
Dude, here.
But I didn't. I've been up.
You just found bass, dog. What are you talking about?
Oh, God, that's so much bass that I don't know. I don't know if anybody can hear that. LZ's got so much. I mean, I don't even know what to say about that. If I had one trait in a receiver, and it's not really a trait, I guess, but a skill that I have come to appreciate, it's this idea that you are the best route runner, that you absolutely can get separation on tight routes. I just saw the effect that Amari Cooper, who's lauded for that, had on Dak Prescott. And I understand lifting the top off the defense and stretching it out. I don't think that's who Van Jefferson is supposed to be for the Rams. I think he's slot, get open underneath, find small space separation.
Well, the problem with that, though, Will, is they already got a guy. Now, if they're talking about that they don't want to extend Robert Woods beyond this year in Vance, Van Jefferson is, I always want to call him Vance because of my son. Van Jefferson is the guy of your heir apparent to Robert Woods, and we're talking about different language now. We're looking at it differently. But if you're asking him to replace Brandon Cooks, then you certainly didn't draft that type of receiver.
Oh, I got one more question. For a guy who had a book that was entitled Give Me the Damn Ball.
That's right. And we'll write it again, and you would read it again.
Yeah, of course. Of course. Of course. Relax. It's all good here. I'm curious. I don't think this is just a cowboy question. And this is only me being like, I love this so much. I mean, so many weapons. Cooper, Gallup, Lamb, Zeke, Pollard, who's really good. Football's not basketball, meaning it's not – hey, did you get your shots? Did you get your touches? But it is a little bit, did I get my targets? The only negative, the only thing that I wonder with the Cowboys is, can you throw the ball 40 times? I mean, is that really how you want to use this team? Because you shouldn't be dialing Gallup back. He's good. And Cooper, you just paid, and now you got Lamb. My only thing is, can you integrate all these weapons in a way that gets full value out of all of them, Keyshawn?
In your question is spot on, because there's a lot of people out there that don't even know sports that think just because you write a book that says just give me the damn ball is that you got to get the football all the time, which is not true. And for CeeDee Lamb, for Zeke, for Cooper, for Gallup, it's not about I need to get the football all the time or I need to have X amount of touches. It's about utilizing a player at the right time. Guys can be satisfied. If Cooper's a 90-catch guy and I'm a 60-catch guy, when am I getting those 60 targets? Am I getting those 60 targets to make a difference for my team? Or are you just throwing me the football because it's two-minute drill and we ain't got nothing else going? There's a huge difference on the distribution of the rock. Zeke's going to get his 20 touches a game because that's just what – the back is. The back's going to touch it in the backfield. He's also going to touch it in the passing game. Amari Cooper's going to get his targets a game because you paid him a bunch of money. He's a really good player. Same thing with Gallup. Same thing with CeeDee Lamb. They're not walk. Each one of these players are not going to walk away with 100 catches. They're going to get their fair share.
Yeah, what it ends up is you hope. I'll let you, Travis. I'm sorry, but it's probably not the fantasy production everybody hopes, but what you hope it turns into is real-world win production because it's just putting defenses in impossible situations.
Hey, as I've always told people, I'll tell you, Travis and LZ, I didn't play for fantasy. I played to win games.
All right, very quickly, Will, we were having this conversation yesterday. Is Jameis Winston, assuming they get the deal done with the Saints, is Jameis Winston the second quarterback in New Orleans or is he third behind Taysom Hill?
Second. I just don't – look, Taysom Hill, and I think this is the same for Jalen Hurts, who just got drafted to the Eagles, like, that's all promise. Like, we haven't – Taysom Hill in college and in the pros has shown you really nothing to make you believe he's an NFL quarterback. I mean, I'm talking 52%.
I would never agree with you except for right now, but go ahead.
And one-to-one touchdown-interception ratio, 52%. But we're told – hey, no, Sean Payton loves him, and so we're like, ah, he must be something, right?
But no, there's a difference of loving him, though, Will, as a football player and loving him as my backup quarterback. I could tell you what I want you to believe, but do I believe it? That's the key. And I don't think Sean believes that Taysom Hill is the number two quarterback in New Orleans. I've been knowing Sean as long as I've been born. I've been knowing Sean forever.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think Jameis is, so to answer your question, Travis, I think Jameis is number two. And I think it's a perfect situation for Jameis. I talked about this yesterday on the Will Cain Show. Let's take Jameis and Cam. This is tough, man. You can't find a starting job for these guys. You just can't find one. The only one that's even close, I think, is New England. That's the only one where you go, is Jarrett Stidham really the guy? Because even Jacksonville, if Gardner Minshew isn't any good, then their plan is to be terrible and draft Trevor Lawrence. Like, you don't need Cam or Jameis to come in and mess up and win you just enough games that you can't draft your future quarterback. So if I'm Jameis or Cam, I'm looking at really one kind of job at this point, and that is, can I go to one of these places where the starter has got about a year or two left and I can inherit the job?
But see, the difference for me with that,
real quick, Keith, that's Pittsburgh, New Orleans, and Tampa. Those are three places where those guys could fit in that situation. And New Orleans, the best of those, because Sean Payton will rehabilitate Jameis' football reputation.
Yes, Sean's going to do a good job with Jameis. As far as Cam goes, Cam's injury slowed him down from getting signed. And I keep trying to tell everybody, the quarterbacks that got signed are being assigned with people that they know. There's a history there. Nobody's all of a sudden just taking a quarterback that they have no history with. Whether it's Nick Foles in Chicago, history with Nagy. Whether it's now Fitzpatrick staying in Miami, history with the Miami Dolphins. When you start pushing Cam to New England, they talk to him here. But that ain't really what they want to do. That's not their style. They don't have time to be trying to teach him for the next couple years how to be their style quarterback. He's got to go to a team, much like you saying, that has a quarterback that ain't really that good that can be gone in like 4, 5, 6 games, and he could take over for.
That's true. That's the Ryan Tannehill model. Like, what? Yes. Where could I go to a place and steal the job? So name that place, though. What is that for Cam?
Well, me personally, it's the Chargers. Me personally, it would have been the Chargers, and it still is the Chargers, even though they drafted Justin Herbert. I would draft Justin Herbert to have him sit for 3 years while Cam does his deal. And if it doesn't work out, then I'll insert Justin Herbert into the lineup.
All right, guys, let me jump in right here. Well, appreciate it. Don't mean to cut you off there. Sorry about that, Will. Yeah. The Will Cade Show coming up at noon. Will, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thanks, fellas.
You got it. All right, LZ's top 10 coming up next. So I'm not going to lie, I'm pretty excited to hear this top 10 considering the topic of conversation we had during our morning meeting. So with that in mind, LZ, the floor is yours.
Well, fine people, have you seen the latest clip from Jeopardy circulating on social media right now?
I have not.
You have not. All right, Jorge, roll it.
Hematology, you got it. Zulus for 2000. Take a look. Here, as on each September 24th, Zulus celebrate a holiday that was named in honor of this warrior leader of the early 1800s. Sarah.
Who is Shaka Khan?
No. Nope. Who is Shaka
Khan? That's right, Travis. The category is called Zulu, and your people still say Shaka Khan. As opposed to Shaka Zulu. So, once I stopped laughing, I started thinking, you know, Shaka Khan does have them jams. I can understand why she got confused like that.
Yeah, but so, I can't even laugh, man.
I can.
Shaka Khan instead of Shaka Zulu. So this is my top 10
list. But that's the thing. Like, how could you screw that up, I guess, right?
Well, it's because Shaka Khan is so popular, which is why I put together my top 10 list of my favorite Shaka Khan songs, because Shaka Zulu hits didn't actually make it across the water. So here is Shaka Khan's hits coming in at number 10. Let's start off by Telling Me Something Good. Now, this song here had so many legs in large part because it started getting commercialized. And it's now become a part of like popular phrasing, and it's just part of our colloquialism. Like, tell me something good. Like, I want to hear something good. But, you know, Shaka Khan and Rufus, they made it funky. Now, number 9 is one of my favorite ballads by Shaka Khan. The only reason why it's low is because it wasn't a monster hit per se. But the words and her delivery, it's really, really touching and sweet. And that is Love Me Still. Coming in at number 8 is a song that Steve Winwood gets credit for, but we all know Shaka Khan is the one that brought the song home, and that is Higher Love.
Didn't think we'd get Steve Winwood on the show today.
Well, Shaka Khan does the background vocals, which is actually what really makes the song hot and sexy. Coming in number seven, what you gonna do for me? Now, I'm not gonna accuse Janet Jackson of stealing this, but what have you done for me lately is obviously a derivative of what you gonna do for me.
Man, why I feel like I'm walking through my auntie's house just now?
Because it's all Chaka Khan. And speaking of your auntie, it's because she's every woman, Key. See what I just did there? Now, Key, I don't want you to pretend like you don't sing the chorus when you're alone and nobody's looking. Like, I know a lot of dudes love this song, but they don't want to be caught singing I'm Every Woman. But I know when you're in your Prius by yourself and this song comes on, you let it hang out, you do the doggone thing.
Man, this song is a Sunday morning cleanup song. You clean your house, with Sunday Pine Sol.
Lemon Pledge.
Lemon Pledge.
Lemon Pledge. Open up all the windows and get some fresh air.
Number five is Ain't Nobody. I will admit, I probably cook to this song more than any other Chaka Khan song there is. Because if I'm cooking, that means I'm in a good mood. If I'm in a good mood, that means I'm thinking about my baby, and Chaka Khan eventually finds a way somewhere in the mix. Coming in at number four is this funky R&B classic, Do You Love What You Feel? Now, Travis, when you go home and she's got the apron on, you want to pop this song on and get it going.
Hold on. Let me write it down. I need as much ammunition as I can get.
Do you love what you feel, baby? Do you love what you feel? You know why? Because number three, it's a sweet thing. Coming in number two, it's the song that a lot of people, including Keyshawn, did not know that Prince wrote and recorded first. But it's probably one of her most recognizable songs, and that is I Feel For You.
Now that you said that, it has a little Prince to it.
Sounds like a Prince song.
Yeah, it's got some Prince, but a lot of people didn't realize it was Prince. Now, my number one song is number one for one reason and one reason only. When I play it in the house, it's the one Chaka Khan song that my husband actually knows the words to.
Chaka Khan.
So I figured if it made it through the suburbs of a Western Michigan town, it must have been a really big hit, and that is Feel the Fire. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is my top 10 favorite Chaka Khan songs. Not Chaka Zulu, Chaka Khan.
That's one of them songs, Travis, where they come on the air and they go, well, it was a great year. And we look forward to this team coming back next year and trying it all over again.
A little retrospective.
Yeah, it's like, come on, man. We just highlight clips of us losing in the sports reporting at the desk. And he goes, it was a great year. You know, how could you argue with going 22-5? You know, it's like, come on, man.
I'm just glad that LZ turned a Jeopardy Chaka Zulu meltdown into a top 10 list. I like that. A lot. All right. Isaiah Thomas says that he has regrets about what happened against the Bulls 23 years ago. Is he telling the truth or is he being Isaiah? That's next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN.